In Berkeley, I'm Amanda Bellerby. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. On April 17, 1916, in what's known as the Easter Rising, the Irish Citizen Army, together with the Irish Volunteers, rose up in arms against the might of the British Empire. Britain's answer to the risen people of Ireland was the partition of the country in 1920. Six of the northern counties remained under direct British rule. Partition brought with it a carnival of reaction as the North became a highly sectarian state in which Catholics were treated as second-class citizens as part of the state ideology. By the end of the 1960s, a vibrant civil rights movement was well underway in the north of Ireland, but it was shot off the streets by the British Army when 14 unarmed marchers were deliberately murdered in cold blood on Bloody Sunday, 1972. The military occupation of the north by British troops, which continues to this day, began in 1969. And 8 years ago, the Good Friday Agreement started what has come to be called the peace process. This year marks the 90th anniversary of the Easter Rising and the 25th anniversary of the hunger strikes in Lancash Prison's infamous H-blocks, which resulted in the tragic deaths of 10 political prisoners, including the elected MP Bobby Sands. Joining me to discuss the current situation in the north of Ireland is Bobby Lavery. He was Sinn Féin's elected representative in North Belfast from 1985 till 89, and again from 1993 till 2000, and presently lives in San Francisco. On the phone with us is Terry Kirby, prisoner in the H-blocks, friend and comrade of Bobby Sands, and also one of the 38 who managed to escape Lancash in 1983 in the biggest prison break in British penal history. Bobby Lavery and Terry Kirby, thank you so much for joining us on Flashpoints.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hello.
Let's start with some historical context. In 1916 and well beyond then, people used to say that the sun never set on the British Empire. 500 million people were under their control, over a quarter of the world's land mass. This very small number of people took on the world's greatest superpower. And the legacy is just enormous. The Easter Rising of 1916 ended with a very powerful proclamation, a kind of freedom charter, which is framed on many a wall in Ireland and all over the world. What are some of those values? I'm going to start with you, Bobby. Can you talk about what the Irish fight for freedom is about?
Well, first and foremost, it's the right for people to be themselves, for Irish nationalists to be Irish nationalists, and for people who feel a Britishness to also be allowed to have that. Just as Irish Americans have to first and foremost give their allegiance to the American people, the people of Ireland need to be giving their allegiance to the Irish people. Unfortunately, that will has been thwarted by British interference, continuous interference to this very day. Irish Republicans believe in a socialist Ireland, that there's enough wealth in Ireland to be divided among the people of Ireland, that there is no place for unemployment, there's no place for hunger, and there's no place for homelessness. The present Dublin government, which rules over 26 of the 32 counties, has totally lost that belief, which was enshrined in the 1916 proclamation when it stated that we shall cherish all the children of the nation equally. And
the 1916 proclamation also championed women's suffrage.
Oh yeah, the first woman ever elected in a British election was in Ireland and was a member of Sinn Féin, Constance Markovich.
How about you, Terry Kirby? What would you say carried forward for you from the 1916 proclamation while you were, say, in Lancash with other political prisoners?
You know, it goes back farther than that. I remember in 1966 that the Queen came to open the Queen's Bridge, and all attorneys from the 40s and the 50s were all rounded up and taken into jail. And that always stuck in my mind because my father was one of them. We didn't even have a vote. You had to be a property owner to get that vote. I just seen injustice, and I wanted my country back. It's hard to stand back and allow your people to be crucified. I mean, anybody who thinks war is good, war is evil. We always thought that, but you have to do what you have to do.
Can you tell us your story? How long were you there in Lancash, and how did you escape?
Well, I was interned on my 17th birthday. I was arrested that morning and interned.
Could you explain what internment was?
Internment was when they could just come and arrest you and hold you for as long as they wanted to because of your political beliefs and your religious beliefs.
Without being charged?
Yes. Then they come up with these mock hearings. You know, they had screens up and you never got to see who was accusing you. The courts were the same way. They had non-jury trials, which I ended up having to go through. I was interned from 73 till 1975. I was released. And Then I was arrested again in August of 1976 while I was on an operation, along with Kieran Dockley, who gave his life on the hunger strike, and three other volunteers. And I was one of the longest remands at the time. I went from 76 to 78 on remand in the Crumlin Roan Jail and the H blocks. I then went on trial, and again, there was no jury. I refused to recognize the jurisdiction of the court. I was then given 26 years and went straight on the blanket.
Can you explain what on the blanket means?
On the blanket means that I refused to wear a prison uniform because I wasn't a criminal. I also refused to recognize the authorities within the jail. We had our own command structure, which I recognized being a volunteer, and we always claimed that under the Geneva Convention that we should be treated as prisoners of war because we were trying to get a foreign country out of our country. That is the biggest thing. I think a lot of people miss that point. We are not attached to England at the hip. There's an Irish Sea separating us. They invaded our country. We have the right to take our country back. But of course, because Britain is one of the world's superpowers, we're called terrorists. But yet, they had a big stake in this country at one time, and George Washington became a real hero for kicking them out. Look how they talk about slavery. There's no difference. Every man, woman, and child should be free to make their own decisions in life.
What were the demands of the hunger strikers and of the other people on the blanket protest?
Everybody talks about these five demands. I wasn't interested in five demands. What I was interested in was being recognized as a political prisoner for the rights of our people to be able to demand Britain to leave our country. The blanket had been going on for quite a while, and the beatings were every day. I used to take them at least two or three times a day because I was taking appeal visits and whatnot. Even going to see the doctor, you took beatings. Of course, they made you walk naked thinking they would humiliate you. They weren't humiliating me because I could hold my head up because I believed in what I was doing was right. As Bobby brought up to me yesterday, there was another one of the hunger strikers, Matt Devlin, who died recently, having been on the hunger strike so long. And then there was Pat McKeown, who, after being released, went on to be a champion of the people, and Sinn Féin, who passed away a few years ago. Let's not forget those people. You know, Bobby Sands and Joe McDonald, Kieran Dockerty, Francis Hughes, Raymond McCreesh, Red Mick, Patsy O'Hara. You'll have to forgive me. When I talk about these people, it's like they're here with me, because not only were they comrades, they were friends. It's an honor to be able to bring them up and be able to pay tribute to them. And I thank you for giving me this opportunity. These people didn't have four heads. They were human beings. Some were fathers. They were somebody's son. They were somebody's brother. And they were also great friends, and they were champions of their people.
Why don't you read those three other names, just so we've mentioned all the men who died on the hunger strike.
Tom McElwee, Michael Devine, and
Kieran Dougherty.
Kieran Dougherty.
Terry, could you tell us about your escape and how you ended up here in California as part of the H Block 4?
The escape, I guess, had been in the works for a while, but I wasn't informed about it until the day before. I just got asked, how did I feel about it? Escape? And I says, well, what do you want me to do? Because it doesn't matter who goes on them as long as we try to get somebody out. And I was asked, no, we're not asking you to help. We want to know if you want to go. And I said, certainly. It was probably the longest 24 hours of my life, knowing that I was going on an escape.
How long had you been in Lancash before you escaped?
I was in 8 years.
8 years.
The second time. And I was told what I had to do, and I did it. And next thing I knew, I was in a van, and we got to the front gate, and somebody shouted that it was all up. We were caught, and we got out. And I remember standing at the side of the van with the rest of the guys. And you might remember this, Bobby. The front gate had this massive big gate. It was an electric gate. So when it opened, it had to open the whole way before they could close it again. And you have to remember, there was a bunch of guys standing there, like 30-odd people standing there that hadn't seen green fields in a long time. So all I heard was, it's every man for himself.
So you all ran?
We ran, and we just ended up having to fight hand-to-hand with the screws. I remember getting out and all this barbed wire, razor wire everywhere, and it was like, I remember throwing people over it. You know, the adrenaline just, you can do anything when the adrenaline starts going. And I remember running up a field and Jerry Kelly's, I overtook him, and Jerry says, you can run. And they started firing shots at us. We just kept running down, and there was this house with all these cars, and next thing I know, everybody's in the house, and we took a car. Bick was driving, and we started driving towards Belfast. We decided that wasn't good.
To go to Belfast?
To go to Belfast because of the number of Belfast people that were on the escape, that they were probably swamp areas. So we're listening to the radio, and I laugh at this because here's the Brits, all their intelligence, but they're so stupid. They give out these press releases that they have set up
roadblock,
a cordon of 2 square miles around the jail. So we got outside that, and then we went up to a farmhouse, I think it was, and we parked the car and went into the house and sat there, and then we started walking. It took us a week, the 8 of us, to walk, traveling at night and sleeping with the cows and the sheep. And we did that because of the helicopters that were out for the infrared for body heat. So we lay down with the animals so as that they couldn't pick us up. The last night of the long track, we walked actually right down Newry on the railroad tracks to an army barracks on each side of it. And we walked in to Cross McLean and we went into a hayloft. The next morning we get up and it happened to be a Catholic family, a nationalist family. Because of internment, you knew people from all over Ireland that had been interned, so we got the hold of a guy, and the local IRA come up that night and took us across the border. I stayed in Ireland for a while, but it was getting very hot, and it was decided that some of us needed to leave, and I got on a plane in Dublin Airport and come to this country.
And so you lived here in the Bay Area for quite a while before the British government came after you and tried to have you extradited back to Ireland, correct?
10 years.
10 years in the Bay Area.
Oh, I got to tell you a funny story to lead up to this. The day that Jimmy Smith was arrested.
Jimmy Smith was another one of the escapees.
Him and Kevin Hart were arrested first. I was in Jimmy Smith's house the morning that they arrested him, and they showed me my own picture and asked me, did I know myself? And I said, no. And they let me go, and they didn't. It was almost 2 years later that they finally got me. Huh. I just fought them tooth and nail. I got bail in 1996. I was in from 1994. I got bail, which was $1 million. And finally, the judge said we have to go back, even though that he knew our, you know, we would probably be in danger and the beatings and whatnot. So we appealed it, and we were allowed out on bail again. The Brits had appealed again, and then they made their announcement that they were not going to try to extradite us. The Ninth Circuit had given them so many weeks or months to do this, and then when they didn't do it, the Ninth Circuit ruled in our favor.
So they didn't even officially give up on you?
No. So I can't leave this country. If I leave this country, it starts all over again.
So you haven't been able to go home in all this time then, Terry?
I can't go home. I just found out a couple of weeks ago my mother has cancer and my father has cancer. But our people are strong and my family understands that I can't go back. Because this is not about Terry Kirby. What I do, affects everybody back there. I'm just one of the people that stood up to the Brits, but all our people have stood up in their own way because we couldn't survive without each other. It's like a big wheel. It needs all the different spokes in the wheel to operate, and that's what the Irish people are doing.
I'd like to give Bobby Lavery a chance to tell us his story. You were in Loncash yourself.
Yeah, I was in Loncash for 3.5 years. My firstborn child was born 6 months after I was arrested, and he was 3 the day after I was released. And he was later shot dead, sitting watching TV at home by loyalist pro-British death squads. That was the UFF carried out that shooting. Another group, the UVF,
which Ulster is the Ulster Volunteer Force.
Yeah, the 8 months previously had shot my youngest brother, who was sitting wrapping Christmas presents with his little girl. And they kicked in through the back door, and he seen them and threw the child away and they fired into his chest. 3 months after my son was killed, they actually attacked the house again. That I normally, when I was going to my family home to visit, because it was too dangerous for me to live there, I would go in through the back door. And on two occasions that year, 1993, I went in through the front door, and on both occasions there were attacks. There was also a security camera from Girdwood Barracks, which has now been demolished as part of the peace process. But there was a security camera pointing directly at my door. I pointed this out to the police, pointed this out to the media. A guy from the media told me that he questioned the police about the camera and they said it wasn't operating at the time.
Now, why were you targeted by these death squads?
They target Catholics because they're Catholics. Mm-hmm. At one time, it got so ridiculous that they said kids going to nursery school, that's 3 to 4.5 year olds, would be targeted because their teachers were IRA or whatever. I mean, they just widened the thing. And you'll find this in all the struggles throughout the world. You will find, you know, it happens in the Middle East, it happened in Africa. Some will be favoured by the establishment and the others will not. My experience in prison in 1974, conditions and attitudes got so harsh in Loncash prison camp that we prisoners burned it to the ground. We were still inside because it was surrounded by huge barbed wire fences. And of course, British soldiers. Mm-hmm. Terry was talking about the screws in prison. That refers to prison guards who'd seen their job as screwing your spirit into the ground. Mm. And so they were referred to as screws. They would raid the compounds where we were held from time to time to see had we any contraband or whatever. It was an excuse to come in and beat some of us up. And they did come to dislike and to understand that some people were a bit more political than another. The more political you became, the more they would beat you. I mean, and that's why there was attacks in my house, because I politicised myself and politicised other people while I was on it. I taught people that you didn't have to put your hands against the wall if you weren't suspected of committing a crime. They did not like that at all. They prefer people to be very subservient to them. If you go along with someone telling you to stand against the wall, even you're not obliged to, then they won't have to bring out a law saying you have to stand against the wall when you're told to. You see, they get away with ordering people about because we all submit to this figure of authority.
Terry, what was your experience in the prison with unity of spirit and resistance to the screws and to the types of punishment that was meted out to you?
It was so bad in the jail because of the raids, and especially in internment. You have to remember, we weren't charged with anything. The abuse, the beatings that we were taking after Loncash was burnt down, they come over with helicopters and just started throwing out, what is it?
CR gas.
CR gas.
Is that like tear gas?
I'll tell you a thing about CR gas. CR gas was a new gas. It was like CS gas, tear gas, but it had never been used before, nor has it been used since. It was a product of British and US ingenuity, and they had signed a treaty that neither would use it without permission of the other. And it was admitted by the British government that they had permission to use it in Loncash at that period in time, but they denied ever using it.
And what did it do to you?
It was like being suffocated. It was like someone stuffing cotton wool up your nose and in your mouth. You just couldn't breathe. You collapsed your whole muscle system. People are investigating this moment in time because it has transpired that the number of former prisoners who were in 1974, 15th of October, were exposed to the CR gas. The number of them people who have died before 65 is way out of proportion to the rest of society. Heart attack and cancer.
Well, we're going to leave it right there. I'd like to thank you both, Terry Kirby and Bobby Lavery, speaking with us about the importance of the freedom struggle that you've both sacrificed so much of your own lives for. I really thank you both very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you for allowing us a voice to commemorate and put the points of people of Ireland.
Please tune in next week to Flashpoints for part two of my interview with Terry Kirby and Bobby Lavery. This is Amanda Bellerby for Flashpoints, wishing all of you a happy St. Patrick's Day.